the left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
All right, we are underway on this Thursday edition of the program. It is Thursday, November 28th with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. Hello, Vicks.
Hello, Patty. How are we doing?
I'm doing well. Good. We are underway on the Sports Drive brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at Calgary Lock and Safe. com. We're available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. As the Flames continue a four-game road trip, they get set to take on the Columbus Blue Jackets on Friday afternoon, Black Friday in the U.S., 1 o'clock face-off, noon pregame, right here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. And this hour, it's time for the Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport. And we welcome in the voice of the Flames, Derek Wills, now to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable on this U.S. Thanksgiving Thursday. And Willsy, Wednesday night, Flames lose 2-1 in overtime on the road in Detroit. They don't score their one goal until there was a little less than 3 minutes to go when Connor Zary ripped home a power play goal. And, you know, it's been very widely spoken about, especially over the last week or two. You can now make it 20 consecutive games the Flames haven't scored three or more goals. I'm curious. Now we see them lose in Ottawa. We see them score just the one goal and lose Wednesday night in Detroit. At what point do we worry about Calgary's lack of offense starting to become a little bit of a hindrance here, or a big hurdle that they're going to need to clear?
Well, I don't know about you guys, but I'm already at that point. You know, it's funny, for most of the season, the Flames were really good at 5-on-5, and that's where they were generating most of their offense, and the power play was struggling, and now it's kind of flipped. The power play is on a hot streak right now. I mean, they've gone 6-for-14 in the last five games and have jumped from 13.5% being ranked 30th in the NHL in the power play to 19.7% and being tied for 17th in the league with a man advantage. So the power play has started to score, and you know they've had a tougher time putting the puck in their opponent's net at 5-on-5. But it's a concern for me, guys. I mean, to go 20 games without scoring more than three goals is a little bit mind-boggling, I'm not going to lie. I haven't looked at the updated numbers today, but when I was prepping for yesterday's game, their streak of 19 straight games with three or fewer goals was nine games longer than any other team in the league this season. So just think about that for a second. So yeah, they're going to have to start to score more than three, not every night, but on some nights. And I'm going to make a bold prediction. I think they get four or more goals against the Blue Jackets on Friday. And maybe it's not that bold because the Blue Jackets are 29th in the NHL in goals against per game at 3.62. But you know, it feels like the Flames are overdue. Their power play is going. And I feel like they are probably overdue to score some more goals at 5-on-5 as well. Listen, they've been really good defensively. The Flames are 7th in the NHL in goals against per game at 2.70. And it is a 3-2 league. So on a lot of nights, 3 is going to be good enough to get you 2 points. But on some nights, it's not. And I do think that it's going to be an issue if they don't start to score some more.
Yeah, Willsy, I'm with you. This should already be alarming to the Calgary Flames. I'm certain that it is, because you just have to look at the old schedule and see how it's unfolded lately. Four of the last five losses for the Calgary Flames are one-goal setbacks. One was in a shootout. Two of those were in overtime. And they're down about half a goal per game off their pace from last season. This season, they've scored 2.57 goals per game, 26th in the NHL. Last season was 309. That was good enough for 19th. So when you consider the fact that they're scoring one goal fewer every two games, and you go and you check the loss column, and four of those five losses, most recent losses, are by one goal, well, suddenly you're talking about one goal more every second game. You're looking at evening up some of those games and perhaps coming away with one extra point, maybe two in some cases, if you can just sort of cure those scoring woes. So, yeah, this is already alarming. This stretch has gone on way too long, and it's something that the Calgary Flames need to rectify if they want to hold on to a playoff position, because scoring 2.5 goals per game isn't a recipe for a lot of two-point nights for the Calgary Flames. And if you're able to look at the Columbus Blue Jackets, like you mentioned, Wilsey, and maybe take advantage of a team that hasn't had the best defensive outing so far this season, it's a good place to start.
You know, guys, it is definitely a hindrance, and it's already turning into one. And I think we've seen that here on this road trip. I just don't know how much more offense this group has in them. And I'm not suggesting they don't have more. I just don't know how much more. Like, are we talking about this team able to up their average in the final three quarters of the season by a goal per game? Are we expecting them to be in the top half of the league offensively? Do we just want them to get into the kind of the high teens, low 20s? And that's kind of what I'm curious about. And I don't even have an answer for it, guys. I just don't know how much more offense this group has in them. Like, how much more are we expecting offensively from Huberto? A little bit more, but we're talking about a guy who hasn't got over 55 points over the last two seasons. Right now, I think he's on pace for 44 as it stands right now, somewhere in that range. So I think there's a little bit more from Huberto. How much more are we expecting from Kadri? Well, last year he was their leading scorer, had the second best season statistically of his career, and he's definitely on pace for lower than what we'd expect from him. But how much more? And that's my big question right now is, okay, Flames are not one of the highest scoring teams in the league. Right now they're 26th at 2.57. Do we want them to get to three? Is that realistic? Or is it more realistic that if they do have a little bit of an uptick in them, maybe they can get from 26th to like 19th? And that's kind of my big question, because there's no doubt about it that the more this goes on, the more that goaltending and their strong defensive play isn't always going to be enough to win them games on a regular basis. I just don't know the answer, Wilsey, to the question that I'm posing in terms of how much more offense they have in them, because I think we went into this season all believing, at least I did, went into this season believing that this was probably going to be a team that had to work pretty hard for goals.
Yes, but I still think they have quite a bit more in them. I mean, their two top point producers are defensemen. It's craziness. Rasmus Anderson and Mackenzie Weegar are tied for the team lead in points with 13, which, by the way, is the fewest number of points that any team leader in the NHL has. So offensively, I think there's a lot more to give. And it's not even about the young guys for me who are less established in this league. It's about the more veteran players. None of Jonathan Huberto, Nazem Kadri, Michael Backlund, Blake Coleman, the list goes on, are on pace to be even close to what their career averages have been. So I've got to think at some point in time, those guys are going to get it figured out. And then you've got some younger guys who should still be getting better in this league. Connor Zary has been incredibly snake bitten. Matt Coronado has been productive, but he should continue to improve. Martin Pospisil really struggled for a little while and seems to be at least starting to find his game. Yegor Sharangovich didn't look like the same guy in the first handful of games this season that he did for most of last season, but he started to come around now. So I do think that this team has the ability to score a lot more goals than they have to this point in the season, but it's going to have to be a collective effort. They are a team that is built to roll four lines and roll three pairings and use two good goaltenders. And, you know, they've been good defensively. The goaltending has been fantastic. But offensively, outside of the first three or four games of the season, there's been a lot left to be desired for this team. So I do think they have to find a way to start to score more goals, and I think they have it in them.
Yeah, just to piggyback off of what you said there, Wilsey, you run through the list of the statistics for the Flames, and you mentioned Anderson Weegar being 1-2. You run through the stat sheet on CalgaryFlames.com, and you wonder which forward would be satisfied with their production or their output at this point this season, where Jonathan Huberto leads the way with 12 points in 23 games. Kadri, Connor Zary are both tied there with 12 points in 23 games. And you got Coronado and Backlund at 10. Like, if you were to a man to go up to each individual player on the team, and I know it's not all about goals and assists and points, but at the end of the day, it's about wins. And how do you do that? You score goals. I can't imagine there are too many people in that Calgary Flames dressing room satisfied with the production line that they've put up this year.
I'm going to answer your question, Vix, because I think I have a solid answer. One, Justin Kirkland.
Yep.
I mean, beyond him, I don't think there's a single forward on this team happy with how much they've produced offensively this season. because they know that they have more in them.
And I wonder, and the only other rhetorical question I'd ask, is this a product of the way they play? And is the way that they play being so, like, we keep on hearing, whether it's Ryan Huska or Blake Coleman or whoever we end up hearing from, you hear a lot of, we're going to be playing in a lot of low scoring games. The way we play is a really tight knit, defensively focused, hardworking brand of hockey. And that's another question I wonder is, you know, is what we're seeing from this group offensively and what we're seeing even from some of these individual players who have their numbers lower than I think a lot of people on the outside would expect. How much of that is a product of the way this group plays? And that's why I'm not lacking confidence. I'm just not as confident as you guys are that all of a sudden there's this massive uptick in offense from this team available. I really do wonder if this is kind of part of what their identity is. And if it's not, and they do have a whole lot more in them, then great. I'm really curious to see how this story evolves into the second and third quarters of the season.
Yeah, and I think that's a big part of it, Pat, or at least a part of it. I mean, I don't expect this team to be the 1987 Edmonton Oilers, but I do think they have the ability to score more goals than they have this season. Right now, the two guys who look the most snake-bitten to me are Connor Zary, and it's been a while for him, and it's starting to come, which is good because it took way longer than it should have for him to start scoring more goals and producing more points with how he's played. And the captain, I think Michael Backlund is generating a ton of chances offensively now and just isn't getting rewarded. I thought Nazem Kadri was good against the Red Wings in game two of the road trip. And, you know, he's been snake bitten as well. So those guys and then some other guys who just aren't playing good enough. I mean, Andrei Kuzmenko's clearly at the top of that list with one goal and 9 points in 23 games this season. Martin Pospisil would be on that list for me as well. He can do a lot of things to help you win, but I still think he has more potential offensively. So I do think that this team has more goals in them, and they're going to have to start to find ways to actually turn their chances into goals moving forward if they're going to continue to win. Listen, they're good defensively. Again, the goaltending has been great, but on some nights you're going to have to score more than three to win. That hasn't happened in 20 games, so hopefully they can find a spark offensively, and that'll make them an even more difficult team to deal with.
It is our Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg on this Thursday edition of Flames Talk. Geez, the days are blending together once again. It's a Thursday edition of Flames Talk. I want to pick up on Connor Zary, guys, because he scores the only goal in the loss against Detroit on Wednesday. He scores a power play goal, a nice confident step up, and he risks a shot past Cam Talbot. Nice screen by Jonathan Huberto to tie that game and salvage the single point for the Flames. As we're watching Connor Zary approach kind of a season and a half in the NHL, how much have we on the outside, but maybe more importantly, how much internally has Connor Zary turned into a guy that when this group needs an offensive spark, when this guy needs a big play at a big moment, when this team needs a big goal, like how much are they already counting on Connor Zary to be that guy?
A lot. Well, I mean, it's been fun to watch. Are you wearing a cap right now, Pat?
I am not, no.
Well, if you were, I would put a feather in it because you said, you know, going back to last season that you thought Connor Zary should get a long look at center. Teams gave Martin Pospisil really a long look at center to start the season. That didn't work. So then they turned to Yegor Sharangovich, which worked better, but not as well as they wanted it to. So it was finally Connor Zary's turn. And the way I see it, and I'm not sure if you guys are on the same page or not. I suspect you are, Pat. Aaron, I'd like to hear from you. But I don't think that the move to center has negatively influenced how Connor Zary has contributed offensively. I know his numbers aren't where he wants them to be, or in my opinion, where they should be. He's got 5 goals and 12 points in 23 games. I think he has been consistently the most dangerous player on this team in the first 23 games of the season. Do you guys see it the same way?
Yeah, I certainly do.
Yeah, I mean, I'm even a little pleasantly surprised on that front, Wilsey, in terms of how much it really hasn't, the move to center really hasn't messed with that at all. Like, I thought it might take a little while for the offense to show up a little bit, but we're still seeing a lot of those things, which has even been a pleasant surprise for me. And yeah, I was pretty adamant. I thought moving him to center would be a really good move, but I still thought it might take a little bit of time, especially on the offensive side, to for him to feel a little more comfortable. But it seems to have happened really quickly.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And there was a number of instances even on Wednesday night where, you know, he was the deepest forward in the defensive zone, but his ability to skate the puck up the ice, and he's really good at entries, whether it be at 5-on-5 or on the power play. It just allows him to get quickly from being in a defensive position into generating offense again. So it's been a really pleasant surprise for me. I wasn't sure it would work. And of the three guys who they've tried as the other centermen in their top nine to go with Nazem Kadri and Michael Backlund, for me, Connor Zeri's clearly been the best of the bunch.
Yeah, when we're comparing Zeri moving down the middle even to Pospisil and what we've seen from Sharon Govich, Zeri's the clear winner in terms of the internal competition for who's going to run down the middle. And for me, it took him two or three games to get fully comfortable in that position. But since then, he's sort of taken off to the point where, yeah, and asking this question and getting the answer, more often than not, I personally am looking at Connor Zeri in order to jumpstart the offense for the Calgary Flames. And he's in the midst of a four-game point streak. It's his career-long, matching his career-long. He's had four in a row three separate times. But it just leads back to the point of he was one of those players out of his rookie year. You either take the next step or the dreaded sophomore slump hits. To me, I know the numbers, the raw data of the numbers, you know, the goals, assists, points isn't necessarily there for Connor Zeri with 5 goals and 12 points in 23 games, but his ability to make an impact on the game has certainly been there, mostly game in, game out. There have been a stretch or two where I've wondered a little bit on the consistency, but other than perhaps maybe a 3 or 4 game stretch, he's been there. And to the point, to me, I look to him now the way I sort of looked last year or the year before to Nazem Kadri to spark the Calgary Flames offense a little bit. To me, that responsibility has shifted a little bit from Kadri to Connor Zeri.
Yeah, it was funny because I know that this is what Eric Francis wrote about following the game Wednesday in Detroit, and I was thinking about it as the game was going along, and then so hearing Francis ask Ryan Huska and Michael Backlund about this post-game on Wednesday, I was like, okay, so Francis has picked up on this too, so I'm like, I want to make sure that I make this a roundtable topic with the guys on Thursday, because As that game was going along, first of all, it was so hard for the Flames to generate anything offensively, especially 5-on-5 all night long, and credit to the Red Wings for doing that. But the one guy consistently in that game that was doing that was Zeri. And I thought to myself as the game was going along, it's like, how many nights have there been recently where it's like, geez, doesn't feel like the team has a lot of punch offensively, but Zeri looks like he's going. And then as they got that late power play, I remember when Dylan Larkin took that penalty and the Red Wings were so upset about him. Like, well, no, that was clearly a faceoff violation. So go sit. But you're like, those are the types of ones, especially when they already have killed off one in the third period and they still have a 1-0 lead. It just felt like that one. You're like, geez, This one is, it feels like the Flames are going to tie it on this one, just based on how game scripts go. And I said to myself, man, I wonder if it's Zeri who ends up being that guy. And there he was, walking into the circle with Jonathan Huberdeau screening him in front and ripping it past Cam Talbot. And when Zeri scored, I just was like, yeah, this is the guy who more and more is starting to become the guy that you feel like, hey, if they're in a game where they're not playing very well, but they need somebody to turn it, Zeri's probably the guy that you're thinking is going to do it more often than not. And guys, for him to be his age and with as little NHL experience as he's got and where he was, say, 2 years ago at this time, for him to be that guy right now so quickly is a real, you want to use that term that you used a little earlier, Wilsey? That's a real feather in his cap for what he's been able to do so quickly at the highest level in the world.
Yeah, well played, Pat. I really like how Connor Zeri is playing right now. And I think it might be time for the Flames to do a little bit of line juggling again. I mean, goals have been hard to come by to start this four-game road trip. So I'm going to propose a swap for you fellas. All right?
Okay.
So I would like to swap Blake Coleman, who has been playing on the right side of a line with Connor Zeri and Jonathan Huberdeau, to the left side of a line with Michael Backlund and Matt Coronato. So you reunite Coleman and Backlund, and you move Yegor Sharangovich up onto the right side of what I consider to be the top line right now. How do you guys feel about that?
For me, I don't hate it, but at the same time, I really like what I've seen out of Sharangovich, Backlund, Coronato, so that might make me a little bit hesitant, but I understand the thought process of elevating someone of Sharangovich's offensive instinct into a role alongside Connor Zeri, who I think we collectively agree has been the most dangerous offensive player for the Flames. So I get the thought process. My only hesitation comes with the fact that I've really liked the trio of Sharangovich, Backlund, and Coronado.
I think I would be in agreement with you, Wilsey, on this one, only because it feels like Sharangovich has got his swagger back a little bit. I mean, even against Detroit, he was one of the other guys who looked dangerous a little bit. He was shooting it, and there were a couple of times where you could kind of tell from Cam Talbot's body language when he missed the net. He's like, holy cow, that thing went right by me, but just missed. And so I wonder if because now that Sharangovich is seemingly found it, his confidence seems like it's a whole lot higher than it was earlier in the year when he was battling through the recovery from injury. I wonder if now is a good time. Okay, you've been with Backlund for 4 or 5 games. Backlund, we know, is consistently a fixer. Is it time now to put Sharangovich back on a line that maybe suits his usage a little bit more? So, yeah, I'd have no problem with that because we always know that Coleman, Backlund, and whoever is going to work. And so I don't think you're worried about needing to find chemistry with those two guys. And, you know, on the other hand, the other part that I'd mention on Coleman is that I don't know. He kind of looks a little lost right now. And so I think that there's also a little bit of a benefit there.
Yeah. And I do wonder if he's a little bit banged up, guys. So the Flames, when they flew from Ottawa to Detroit, got in at like 3 o'clock in the morning. So what was supposed to be a full practice turned into an optional. And then Blake Coleman was the only forward not out there for a pretty full morning skate prior to that game against the Red Wings yesterday. So I do wonder if he's maybe playing through something right now. But, yeah, he doesn't look like himself, whether it be an injury or just being away from Michael Backlund. So I think reuniting Blake Coleman and Michael Backlund would be a good thing. And Yegor Sharangovich right now playing on the left is playing well. But even with him playing on left wing, a lot of his shots still come from the right side. I actually like him a little bit better on the right. He's got such a great shot. So it's something that I would think about if I was the Flames coaching staff. And with the way they've struggled offensively, I would actually be a little bit surprised if they didn't do a little bit of tinkering ahead of Friday's game against the Blue Jackets. But we'll wait and see.
All right, Wilsey, have a wonderful rest of your Thursday and U.S. Thanksgiving. We will talk to you on the telecast, or not the telecast, the broadcast on Friday, but we won't talk to you again on the roundtable until Monday. Thank you, sir. Have a wonderful rest of your Thursday, hey?
Okay, guys, have a good night. Enjoy the football.
We shall. He's Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg, and that's your Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's Hockey Station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Flames Talk on this November 28th. It's a Thursday, November 28th. It's Steinberg and Vickers along with you. And we have got lots to get to on this Thursday edition of Flames Talk. It's a Thursday, which means we're chatting with Kevin Woodley, our goaltending guru from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. He joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline on this Thursday edition of Flames Talk. Hello to Vix, and hello to Kevin Woodley, who joins us right now. Mr. Woodley, how are you?
I am in beautiful Mill Bay on Vancouver Island at Brentwood College School, and my daughter is playing in the AA Provincial Volleyball Championships this weekend. It is a gorgeous West Coast day here. It is so my life is good.
Very nice. Very nice. Right now. It's not the same here. It's bad traffic and it's snow and grossness here in Calgary. So we envy you, my friend. That's good to hear.
I am on island time right now, so I may speak a little slower in this hit.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and it's funny. You and I were talking a little earlier, and you've got something coming out tomorrow at NHL.com. You've got something coming out tomorrow that I think a lot of Flames fans are going to be interested in because it has to do with Dustin Wolf. He's kind of one of the focuses of what you've got coming out on Friday at NHL.com, hey?
Yeah, my bosses at NHL.com, who, as Aaron knows, are the best. Allow me to write a goalie column every couple of weeks, and tomorrow is every couple of weeks. So for this week's Unmasked column, I dug into the idea of, you know, some of the stereotypes that surround undersized goalies, a little bit with Wolf and a little bit with Saros and a little bit with wasn't able to get quick, but with Steven Valiquette, who obviously watches him closely. And, you know, some of these themes are things we've talked about in terms of the expectations of smaller goalies needing to be more aggressive, but the reality that Dustin Wolf really took a major step forward in his career after taking a step back in his crease. But the one thing that I think you guys are going to love, so a lot of this is the stuff that we've talked about, but here's the one to keep an eye out. I guess this is what they call a tease, and yet I'm going to give it away. So this is worth the read if you're a Flames fan. Saros, yeah. There's 4 6-footers have played in the league this year, and Saros at 5'11", five smallest guys in the league. So as Saros said, obviously there's not many of us, but I don't really pay attention to the size. I pay attention to how goalies play. There's a lot of saves. You notice how he controls his body and how fast he changes direction. So all those little things as a goalie, you really appreciate when you see that. And here's the beauty. His technical, his skating, and all those little details are, I feel, better than anybody in the league. So that's what I feel all goalies can look up to.
Huh.
That is pretty high praise from a guy who's already got a Vezina finalist nomination on his resume and since entering the league has a top five save percentage in UC Saros. That is pretty high praise from UC Saros.
No kidding. And like, so clearly, Kev, like other goalies around the league, and obviously guys like Quick and Saros are going to be a little bit more in tune with this because they also have that kind of small goalie stereotype that they've got to work with on a day-to-day basis. But clearly other goalies around the league know how good Dustin Wolf is, hey?
Yeah, I was surprised. UC actually told me that he'd been watching Wolf since the Hlinka Gretzky in 2018. Wolf would have been a 17-year-old. Like, that's how he's been paying attention to him since then and watched him at the World Juniors, and he's caught his eye for a long time. And interestingly enough, we talked about the change that Wolf has made. It's not just about above your goal line and not coming out too far that way. It's about side to side and always having a leg sort of inside the lines of your post. And Saros is trying to reel his game in a little bit as well, a little more so. I think he felt last year in the playoffs that there was too much chase in his game. And for all the talk around the NHL about the skill of the shooters and their ability to pick spots, the reality is goals are going in more because they're using that skill to make goalies go east-west. And the number of, you know, whether it's scoring chances or goals, the biggest increase in offense per ClearSight Analytics in the last 5 years is what we call low slot line plays. So plays that go across the middle of the ice below the hash marks. And it's not just the ones that get through clean to the other side for a one tee or a quick shot. It's the amount of them that hit a skate, hit a leg, hit a body, and end up being a broken play. So you're forcing goalies to go side to side, and you're creating chaos in front of them. Even when that puck gets through and they're able to create a clean read, it's one of the highest danger chances you can get. You add pucks bouncing around randomly that they don't get to feel or get a sense of where it's going based on a rebound, and it gets even more complicated. And so the fact that Wolf is playing at this size, at this depth, you know, which runs counter to all the stereotypes about small goalies got to be more aggressive, that Saros is looking to do the same himself, and that Jonathan Quick is having a revitalization over the last two seasons now at age 38. Again, the ties systems-wise, Quick bought in under Benoit Lair, goalie coach of the New York Rangers last year, now the goalie director, but his philosophies are very much still in place. Where did Mackenzie Skapski come from in terms of having played his brief NHL career in the NHL? with Benoit Wallaire, under Benoit Wallaire, has a lot of his philosophies baked into what he teaches as well. And I think you're seeing this not just with Wolf and the success he's having. I know Jason LaBarbera very much on board with this positional stuff as well. We chatted when he was in town and the importance of you just can't, the game's way too dynamic east-west to play outside your paint no matter what size you are. And so this is, it's all coming together very nicely for Wolf, for the Calgary Flames at this level. And I think also you're seeing some of these changes really start to stick with Devin Cooley as well.
So, Kev, when you talk about these sort of east-west opportunities and the low cross-slot chances against that are really driving scoring opportunities at the end of the day, goals, is that one of the biggest strengths in Dustin Wolf's game, is his anticipation, his IQ, his ability to sort of read and react and understand how the play is developing so he's always showing up on time for those sort of east-west chances?
Well, there's a bunch of things that fuel that, right? And actually, he talks about that in this piece. A conservative position means you don't have to go as far, something Saros also talks about, right? The further you are either out on top of your crease or side to side, the larger distance you have to travel on those types of plays. The more you're moving, the harder it is to sort of maintain a good visual connection. So early visuals, good visuals help fuel patience on your edges. Patience on your edges help fuel movement that's quick and explosive to get to the next spot to get good eyes on it again, right? So it kind of all rolls in together. Wolf also talked about, you know, where early in his career when he came out of junior, there was a lot of sort of pushing into shots laterally by sliding, and now it's more of a shift. Again, less exaggerated, more in control. There's a, you know, you heard it from Saros there, like there's a real... Other goalies recognize his ability to go one way and then the other, and that comes from that control. Not pushing yourself blindly into a spot, but keeping your edges under you, making quick, solid pushes, whether on your skates or even when you do commit down, it's not an out-of-control slide. It's more of a shift, and you're able to regather yourself. So I do think all of those elements kind of fuel each other. He's obviously a great skater. He's got great patience on his edges. That fuels good visuals, and then the good visuals allow him to stay patient and then feels the movement because he's not committing early or committing too far to one direction or the other. You add that into a more contained game, and it's just a really nice package where everything sort of kind of feeds each element, feeds off each other in a positive direction.
All right, well, that's Dustin Wolf. That's one half of the tandem. Let's talk about the other in Dan Vladar. And Dan Vladar is a potential trade target. I assume that's more of an external buzz than it is internally, but just curious from your perspective, could he help like a team like Colorado who really needs to stabilize their goaltending position right now, or potentially a couple other teams that are looking to bring in a goaltender via the trade route to help really sort of solidify a tandem in Dan Vladar?
I mean, he's, you know, you guys know the kind of good stretches that Dan has put together in the past for the Flames. I think it was really easy, and I talked about it a lot coming into the season, to kind of overlook, you know, how good some of those runs were that he would get on. It's just a matter of staying healthy, and now that he is, consistency. He's above expected in terms of the environment and his performance relative to it. When we think of some of the names that are below him on that sort of expected save percentage list, like he's right up there. He's right up there just below a Kevin Lankinen, who's getting all kinds of praise here in Vancouver. He's got numbers that are better adjusted save percentage than a Jacob Markstrom right now, a Jordan Binnington, who's probably going to be on Team Canada, a Mackenzie Blackwood, who's also been somebody mentioned, you know, in that trade talk. So I think his performance on this season to date might be a little better than some people think or realize. And compared to what's going on in Colorado right now, where both of their goalies are in the bottom third of the league in adjusted save percentage, just on a numbers basis, I think you could make that case. I don't know if the gap is big enough or if the pedigree is strong enough for them to make a huge investment. Do they look at a bigger name? You know, John Gibson obviously keeps getting thrown around. Do they look at a bigger deal just because of those other elements? But on a performance basis, yeah, absolutely. Dan Vladar, if he can play the way he is right now behind that Colorado Avalanche team, would be an upgrade on both guys at this point.
Vladar being a pending unrestricted free agent, does that help or hinder his trade value in your mind?
Oh, with so much volatility in the position, I think it probably helps. You know, there's only a handful of guys around the league that you look at and you're like, I know what I'm going to get out of this guy from one year to the next, and GMs feel comfortable about it. So I would think the fact that you get to bring him in with no strings attached for the following year, in an era where some teams take the approach of, take a look at Washington, right? Like, they flushed their two long-term guys in Samsonov and Vanacek a few years ago. They bring in Darcy Kemper, and he ends up losing the job to Charlie Lindgren. And now Lindgren's not completely lost the job, but, you know, Logan Thompson, who's another low value, just bring him in his first year, is having, you know, top 10 numbers right now. So I think with the volatility that surrounds the position in the National Hockey League, term is something I've always said you avoid outside of that handful of guys that show you they can deliver year in and year out. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Dan Vladar in his game. We've talked about it many times. But does that mean that GM's going to want to commit long-term to him? I think not having a contract for next year is attractive because you get to sort of kick the tires, see how he fits in your room, see how he fits in your system, see if he can perform the way he is in Calgary behind your team. And yeah. Then in pretty much a buyer's market every summer, you get a decision to make. At least you get a running head start on it.
We're chatting with Kevin Woodley. He is our goaltending guru. He joins us Thursdays here on Flames Talk from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. You mentioned John Gibson. Tell us a little bit more about him and what he brings to the table as a potential trade target.
You know, it's funny. I've been looking into the numbers a little bit on Gibson. I'm not sure they tell the full story, right? Because Anaheim is a tire fire of a team, right? They've been a train wreck for a few years now. Tough to play behind. You know, there were stretches where he would be exceptional and they couldn't score goals. And that is terrible as a goal. There's nothing worse. I remember the old Mika Kiprusoff years in Calgary. I would ask goalies around the league, what would you rather have? A team that defends as well as the Flames but can't score, or a team that might give up more chances but at least you know they'll bail you out? And every single goalie said, I'll take the team that can bail me out with some goals. So Gibson's been through that. He's been through runs with the Ducks when they just can't defend either. It's been a tough go there. His numbers are just slightly below expected throughout. Like, they're not terrible. They're not as bad as people like to make out. Interestingly enough, the one area where he's gotten killed statistically is those low slot line plays. John Gibson has a ton of skill. They've been careful not to try to overly technique him, add a ton of fundamentals is the wrong word. They've been careful not to turn him into a technician. So he plays a very loose, flowy feel game as a goaltender. And there's a lot of positives that come with that. But it's interesting to note, like, is his post play the most modern in the world? No. And then I look at those numbers and he's getting buried in these low slot line chances. Somebody might look at it and say, hey, if I could just add this one technical element, maybe we can improve that and everything else would look that much better. The reality is, like, he gives you solid goaltending. He doesn't give up bad goals. Like, he doesn't give up low percentage goals very often. And maybe this is just selfish. He has a ton of skill and a ton of talent. And there's just a little part of me that wants to see what would happen on a good team for the first time in a very long time for John Gibson. I have a feeling he might surprise a lot of people. There's a ton of skill there, but I'm not the one risking $6.4 million with 2 years left on the deal. So it's easy for me to say on my phone from Vancouver Island, a lot tougher if you're an NHL GM managing a salary cap.
Maybe wrap things up. We didn't get to this last week when we had John, and the Thatcher Demko winds are blowing positively. I'm just curious as to give us the latest lay of the land when it comes to Vancouver and their goaltending situation and what the Canucks are looking at with Demko close to returning and just what the overall picture looks like right now.
Well, it'll be Demko Lankinen when he comes back. I'm not sure if it'll be on this road trip. There was a lot of chatter. It would be. And then I heard some, I think it was Elliot Friedman this morning, talking about maybe wanting for it to happen at home where they have, you know, the full support and the full staff and all the amenities there. Not that there's an injury risk, but just to have all the creature comforts there for his first game in a long time. So whether it's the end of this trip or early back at home in December, his return is right around the corner, and that means that Artur Shelov is headed back to the American Hockey League. It has not been a good go. It was not a good go last night. I mean, I can't help but look at the expected numbers in his starts have been really low, 13 points lower than Lankinen. He's gotten the tougher minutes. He's gotten some tough performances in front of him, but at the end of the day, he just hasn't stopped enough pucks and doesn't look as confident as the guy who came in and helped them get to the second round of the playoffs last year. So doesn't require waivers. Your bigger question, if you're the Vancouver Canucks, is this is a guy you were counting on being your backup this year. Like, if it's not for the Demko injury update late in the summer, they don't add Lankinen. They're expecting to roll
That's
with
right.
Demko and Seelovs. And I think the way Seelovs is gone, they would have been playing the wheels off Demko, which you can't really afford to do because that's exactly what they've done with Lankinen. They've overplayed him, and there was a time there where his numbers suffered as a result. So they'll have a great balance once Demko's back. No need to play him too much because of what Lankinen has done. That's a perfect scenario. But long-term, future, unless they think they can re-sign Kevin Lankinen, they've gone from having a goalie in Artur Seelov that looked like the goalie of the future and at the very least an NHL goalie who could provide them good relief minutes to a guy who right now is going to have to rediscover his game in the American League and no longer has the coach that helped build it up working one-on-one with goalies in the organization now that Ian Clark's been relegated to a scouting role.
I have to imagine you being in the Vancouver market and doing the job that you do, I would have to imagine you feel pretty pretty vindicated on the Lankinen front because you had been talking about him for months and months leading up to him finally signing in Vancouver. You that one must feel pretty good, hey?
I've had the old self back patter out a few times since he's had his success, and obviously that was, I mean, like I said, there was a little stretch there where they overplayed him and the numbers dipped, but his start to the season and then that game the other night in Boston, like that was a pièce de résistance. That was a stolen win by definition statistically and to everyone who watched that game. And I got to be honest with you, it's not just in Vancouver. Where would the Edmonton Oilers be if they decided to upgrade and add Kevin Lankinen as a backup? You know, I said it at the time. I said it going into the season. I couldn't believe he was an unrestricted free agent as training camps opened. I believe he was better. I said he was better then than half the league's backups. And at that point, he wasn't going to be expensive anymore. So the Canucks are benefiting from it, absolutely. But make no mistake, they're benefiting from patience and driving down the price, yes. They're also benefiting from a lot of GMs and a lot of teams just not investing in these statistics that I have access to and missing out on a guy who could have done a really good job for a lot of teams for very little money.
Yeah. Great stuff as always, Kev. Appreciate the time. We will do it again next Thursday and enjoy the rest of your island time, hey?
I will. Peace, love, dope over here on the island. Make sure you guys check out the story tomorrow morning at NHL.com. Enjoy the week, and we'll talk to you next week. Thanks for squeezing me in today.
You know it, and we will indeed check out that article. Dustin Wolf and the focal point of that article Friday morning from Kevin Woodley. Appreciate the time. Kevin Woodley of In Goal Magazine and NHL.com joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Enjoy football and enjoy hockey and football game day specials at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Pickup and deliveries available at Atlas Pizza, 403-248-3344. It's Steinberg and Vickers along with you this hour on Flames Talk. Vickers on Twitter at A.A. Vickers, and this hour well underway, the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.